CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
From Hamilton, Ontario, this is the Green Planet Monitor, your weekly report on Earth systems, human development, justice, and science. Today, zines from Gaza, poetry from Dachau on the Mediterranean, and 32 years after Rwanda's 100-day genocide, the ghosts of hate radio. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Before diving in, a quick appeal. If you appreciate what you're hearing, subscribe to the Green Planet Monitor, greenplanetmonitor.net. Now, the news with Kylie Wong.
The Canadian group Just Peace Advocates is calling on the Carney government to stop granting charitable status to groups tied to Israel's unlawful occupation of Palestine. In a statement, the group argues that charities, universities, and Canadian federal and provincial governments must review donations and partnerships to ensure they do not contribute to activities deemed unlawful under international law. In July 2024, the International Court of Justice ruled that Israel's occupation of the Palestinian West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza are unlawful, and that UN member states must terminate all aid and assistance to Israel's occupation. The Canadian government does not appear ready to do so anytime soon. Having declared that Donald Trump has won the argument on NATO spending, the Carney government is poised to allocate billions of dollars in military spending. It's not just he's winning the argument, he's won the argument, Carney told reporters in Ankara, Turkey, at NATO meetings last week. NATO called on its members to allocate 2% of their GDP on military spending. When Donald Trump was re-elected president in 2024, the Trudeau government more than doubled the spending target to 5%. According to the Parliamentary Budget Officer, it will cost Canada $68.2 billion more a year to meet that spending threshold. Canada's military is facing scrutiny after a defense attaché met with Ukraine's Azov Brigade. Newly released government records show that, in 2025, Canada's defense attaché in Kyiv met on several occasions with representatives of Azov 1, the official fundraising arm of Ukraine's Azov Brigade. The Azov Brigade is reportedly tied to Ukrainian neo-Nazi elements. According to Canada's Department of National Defense, meetings with Azov 1 focused on changes to Ukraine's military command structure and did not constitute an endorsement of the Azov Brigade's views. The department also said that Canadian military assistance is provided exclusively to Ukraine's Ministry of Defense and Armed Forces, not directly to the Azov Brigade. As governments race to build AI infrastructure, communities across Canada are pushing back against the massive data centers that generate power for AI. A movement is emerging across Canada to oppose the rapid expansion of AI data centers. Activists are raising concerns about energy and water consumption impacts linked to AI and limited public consultation about AI technology. According to the online publication The Breach, community groups in Hamilton, Vancouver, Mississauga, and Alberta are organizing campaigns calling for stronger regulations or temporary moratoriums on AI projects. In Hamilton, City Council has passed a one-year moratorium on AI development while developing a framework to assess the impact of future data center proposals. Organizers say the movement seeks greater transparency, democratic oversight, and stronger public input on the development of AI infrastructure. Pacific gray whales are in peril as climate breakdown devastates the Arctic feeding grounds these giant cetaceans depend on. Pacific gray whales are experiencing a population decline linked to warming of their Arctic Ocean feeding grounds, marine scientists and conservation groups say. Reduced sea ice has diminished bottom-dwelling crustaceans, leaving gray whales severely malnourished. Gray whale populations have fallen from about 20,000 in 2019 to fewer than 13,000, with thousands of deaths reported in recent years, experts say. Conservationists are calling for renewed protections and stricter measures to reduce additional threats, including ship strikes, pollution, and habitat disturbance. If you lose thousands of whales in 2 years, that should concern everyone, said Rick Steiner, an Alaska marine ecologist. And that's the news. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Kylie. Today, seemingly uninhabitable after a thousand days of joint U.S.-Israeli genocide, young women and men are writing poetry and publishing it In Auschwitz, Sobibor, Dachau, and Buchenwald, Jewish poets wrote poems too, prose and music as well. Inside apartheid Israel's concentration camp on the Mediterranean, poets are organizing themselves. Coastal Lines Press is a new Gaza poetry collective, 38 writers at this moment. Their goal, to turn words into life-saving supplies for their families. This is Noor Abu Mariam reading her poem, Waiting for the Butterfly. Noor sent this to us by WhatsApp.
Waiting for the butterfly. I know healing is painful, but it's necessary. I try to erase the bad memories, but they return every night before I sleep. And the tear escapes, leaving me in a state no one should have to endure. These hard nights continue. I wake up, put on my clothes, and head to work like a robot. I return home, prepare myself to cry, then sleep, and repeat the same painful routine. I used to escape to the rooftop to breathe in some fresh air, or to draw and write until these words poured out of me. Oh, butterfly, stretch out your wings for me. Open them wide to infinity. Steal me from the roots of my land, but gently. Don't uproot the longing. Leave it behind so I can survive with ease. Let go of this weary country. Haven't you grown tired of sunflowers? Don't you want to try roses and orchids? I want to fly to everything that's new. I open my arms to fly like it's my first time, unaware of what exile means, unfamiliar with longing. Don't bring me back here, lest the causes of death consume me. And here I am, waiting for that butterfly.
Noor Abu Mariam reading Waiting for the Butterfly, sent to us by WhatsApp from Gaza. Noor is one of 38 writers in the Zines from Gaza collective, published by Coastal Lines Press. Coastal Lines is a creative writing and fundraising venture facilitated by a global network of illustrators and distributors. Like Vessels at Sea, Coastal Lines says at their website, Gaza zines travel from coast to coast, drawing lines of human connection and solidarity. We'll link to Coastal Lines at greenplanetmonitor.net. Now, the GPM spoke with Noor the other day at length. We'll share that conversation next week. Here's a conversation with another Gaza poet, Lama Al-Harazina. Lama is 24 years old. She received an English Lit and Translation degree at the Islamic University of Gaza in September 2023, a month before Hamas's daring assault on southern Israel and the start of the U.S.-Israeli genocide campaign, now past its 1,000th day. We reached Lama in her home at this moment, a ruined apartment in Gaza City. Lama, welcome to the Green Planet Monitor.
Hi, David. Thank you so much for having me today. It's such a great honor to be able to take part in this program. I did publish my first zine with Coastal Lines in March 2026. And this was like my first zine with them. And currently I'm working on the second one, which is supposed to go out in August, hopefully.
Huh.
And at the moment, I'm actually in Gaza City. I was displaced in Al-Mawasi for 2 years, and then I returned to Gaza City. But my family are still living there.
In Al-Mawasi?
Yeah, they are still displaced in a tent in Al-Mawasi. Because we don't have a home here in Gaza, but I met my husband in January 2026, and I moved from Al-Mawasi to Gaza City, where we live now.
And where are you living in Gaza City? I mean, what sort of a abode are you living in?
We're living in a very famous neighborhood, which is very ruined, you know, like I live in this house, it's already ruined, but we managed to fix some parts of it. And this neighborhood is called Tal el Hawa, which is one of the largest neighborhoods in Gaza.
Tell me about yourself, Lama, your family, and how the war has, the genocide has impacted your family. I'm sure that you've lost family members. Tell me a bit about this, and friends.
Yeah, so the war did not... the war actually affected everyone in Gaza. Not only me, not only my family, but everyone. It's like a poison that spreads everywhere and it gets you all the time. The moment you think you have moved on or you survive, no, you're actually stuck in the never endless loop of this war. Like its remarks are everywhere. When the war first happened, we were a family, and I have three siblings, three brothers, and one little sister. And I saw that because I was already grown up, I could, I could hide my pain. I couldn't show them that I was suffering, but for my little brother and sister, they were affected the most, especially that my sister. She has celiac disease, which is she's allergic to gluten. And with the famine, with all the food, with the closure of borders, there were many times that she had nothing to eat. We just kept watching her suffer because we couldn't find a gluten-free food for her in Gaza. That was not available, which was supposed to be a normal thing. Like anywhere in the world, you would have these things. And now when we moved from Gaza City and went to Al-Mawasi, that was a new experience. The one that changed all of us the most, because living in a tent was something, how would I describe that? It's like you're ripped off all of your emotions and you're left in this place to suffer. You just have to fight the heat. The instincts, nothing is normal. You just have to adapt to this new life, and it's just horrible. The least thing that you can say about it is that it's horrible. Like when we were living in a tent, every day you don't get to decide what you're gonna do. Life takes you wherever it wants. So you can search for water and you wouldn't even find it. You can search for food, for good food, and then it would get ruined because you're in a tent. You cannot protect it. You cannot keep it safe.
And have you lost any family members?
On a larger scale, yes, we have lost so many members because some of them decided to stay in Gaza City. They didn't want to leave their homes because that was like a strong... they held into their homes, and they have chosen to stay over leaving their place. And but from my family, no, thankfully I did not lose anyone. But from like my friends, they have lost so many family members for the same reason. They didn't want to leave Gaza. They just decided to stay here, even if it meant that they were going to die.
So your mother and your father and your siblings and your cousins, they're all aunts and uncles and cousins, they're all alive.
Yeah, thankfully.
Inshallah, wonderful.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that you've lost friends, close friends of yours.
No, I did not. But some of my friends lost some of their family members, and watching them suffer, that was very sad, you know, because I couldn't do anything to support my friends. I couldn't do anything to ease their pain. And some of my friends have left Gaza. They have evacuated to Egypt, and from Egypt they went to other places. But I did lose a connection with my friends. You know, nowadays we don't talk. It's just As long as I know that they are alive, that's it. I don't want anything else.
And are you able to feed yourself, you and your husband?
Yes, yes, we managed to do that. You know, through the sales of my zine, I was able to, you know, have some sort of income for our little family.
I have your zine in front of me. As we talk, it would be nice if you could read a few of your poems. Is that possible?
Yeah.
Can you read?
Yes, yes.
Can you read "I Wish I Were a Bird"?
Yeah. Just a minute. I need to open that so that I.
And I should, you know, my idea was to get you when you've got a moment to actually record your a few of these. You could do it with greater comfort and kind of poise than doing it live. And then you can send me the audio. But if you can pull up "I Wish I Were a Bird" and read it, that would be great.
Yeah, sure, I can do that. Thank you. So, I wish I were a bird. I wish I were a bird flying freely in this world, with no worries of being killed by a bomb. A bird that does not witness the cruelty of humans. A bird free from weight and loss, free from pain and suffering, free from having to search for home. Just a bird flying over the world, calling a place mine every time I land. But these are only dreams, locked in a place that no longer feels like home. I am a human with eyes that have seen death and a soul shaped by war. I am only a human forced to pay the price for something I didn't choose. Trapped here forever, unable to say goodbye. Someday I'll fly high in this sky, but I will not forget nor forgive what was imposed on me. Until then, may my words fly to you and reach you all.
That's I'm speaking with Lama Al-Harazin, a young poet and the creator of a zine in Gaza. She's currently in Gaza City. Lama, how did you decide how did this come about that you were going to write a zine? I would imagine you've got a notebook and you just write lots and lots and lots, and at some point you thought, I should write a zine. Tell me about this.
So, you know, as an English literature student, I have been writing since I was in college, of course, but they were mostly about academic works, essays and analysis and all of these things. But ever since the war started, I had nothing to do. I was just in every shelter I go to, I am just sitting there doing nothing. And then in September 2024, I decided to write about my experience. I felt that writing was like an escape to me. I felt that it was my only solace in this world. So I kept writing. If anything that happens to me, I would just write it down. In a sad way or in a poetic way, in whatever felt good to me. But I never shared these words with anyone, simply because I didn't know how to do that, and I was not on social media, so I didn't really know how would I get the world to read what I write. And in September 2025, I got to meet Dr. Fiona Murphy from Dublin City University. I was just asking her about scholarships and these things. I felt that it maybe she could know a way for me to get a scholarship in Ireland. And as we were getting to know each other, I shared one of my poems with her. And she was like, oh, you need to get that published. And I was like, but I don't know how. And then she connected me with Annick Yerm, who is now one of my best friends. And Annick introduced me to Coastal Lines Press. And then I met, I was like, oh my God, I didn't know that such a community exists. So many people, so many volunteers from all over the world are there just waiting for you to give them what you have to write. And then they're willing to use that in a scene, illustrate it, and then get it published everywhere, and then without expecting anything in return, just doing this to support writers from Gaza. And that, for me, I felt that as long as a community like this exists, our stories will never die. And since ever that day, the community has been growing, and it has, I think, published so many writers from Gaza, just like me, sharing their stories and words with the world.
The title of your zine is Rain Was Once a Promise. What is rain now in Gaza? What is rain now in Gaza? And I'm thinking of your family in Almawasi.
Yeah, rain is just horrible. It's a horrible sign. And it's something we don't want, especially for people in tents. It means it's a nightmare. It's no longer about cozy nights, cozy vibes, warm tea and chocolate. It's no longer about these things. Now it's about saving the tent, making sure the rain does not flood inside, making sure that you're safe. That's what rain is about now.
And your family in Almawasi living in the tent, who is living in that tent? Who are the people living in that tent, and how big is the tent?
It can have 9 people. That's what, when you receive the tent, that's what they tell you. It can have 9 people inside. But the truth is, we were 5, and it really didn't, it was already too small for 5 people to live inside. And now my mom, my father, and my little brother and little sister are living there.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like being trapped in a place and you're not allowed to move. This is the place that you should stay in. You cannot move.
And what's the sanitation like? I would imagine that I've read that there are insects everywhere and rats and...
That's true. Yes, it's like, because, you know, there's a lack of... There is no clean environment there. Imagine that thousands of people are living next to each other. Intense, nothing. There's nothing that separates you from your neighbors except a tiny bit of clothes that separates you from your neighbor. And water is, there's no water. And they're living actually on sand. So it's an environment made for instincts and rats. That's where they live.
And is Israel periodically, this is supposedly, Almawasi is supposedly a safe zone, quote unquote, but I understand Israel periodically bombs it, and there must be drones, Israeli drones, flying constantly overhead.
In Gaza, there is no safe zone, to be honest. And this is just a lie. There is no safe zone. Any place can be for destruction. It can be dangerous. But because it has so many displaced people there, it bombing does not happen all the time, like in Gaza City. Like here in Gaza, you would hear bombs every day, which is normal. Although there's a ceasefire, but bombing happens.
And where does your family living in the tent in Almawasi, where do they wash themselves? What are the toilet facilities?
So the camp the camp there, the head of the camp, so they get support, like aids and all of these things. And in like 4 months ago, they received an already made restroom, which is offered to families and in the tents. And this is like it's not like the ones that are supposed to be there, but it's better than so many other people in Almawasi.
Now your video is just frozen, and this is usually you're back again. So
yeah,
I mean, so they have access to a toilet of some sort.
Yeah, they do have, and it's in a better condition than other people.
It's just a toilet for that tent?
Yeah, for my family only. No one else is allowed to use it.
But most people living in Almaty.
In other camps, it's a shared one. Yeah, they do have shared ones with their neighbors.
Can you read "If It Rains"? We were talking about what it's like when it rains. That rain is a pleasant thing to watch from inside.
It used to be.
Read "If It Rains."
Yeah. So, if it rains, I dream staying home, blankets wrapping me like a soft hug. I dream of a hot shower, steam carrying the world away, of baking an orange cake, its scent filling our home with joy. I dream of laughter with friends in our favorite place, as if the rain does not touch us at all. But now if it rains, the drops slip through the fragile walls of our tent. The wind tugs as it steams, threatening everything we hold close. Rain was once a promise, soft and pure, but now it brings fear and teaches me how fragile hope can be, and that nothing can replace the warmth of a home.
I'm speaking with Lama Al-Harazin, a young writer from Gaza, and she's now in Gaza City, and her zine has just been released. Rain was once a promise. And I'll share this zine with folks on the Green Planet Monitor and point them to it. And there's actually a QR code in here for people to support Lama and similar appeal put out by Coastal Lines Press to support other authors who are putting out zines in Gaza. What's the future of Gaza, Lama? It's such a big, open question. Where is Gaza going? Is there any hope for Gaza to be reconstructed and for life to resume and for, you know, Palestine to move forward?
That's a tough question because, you know, we hope that it can be, you know, like the old Gaza can be restored, like we can have that Gaza again. But I don't know. It seems like, no, we are actually stuck. We're talking about, like, it's been since October 2023, and nothing has changed except that it's getting worse, you know? Although we're supposed to be going through a better future for Gaza, but it's not. Like, you would see destruction everywhere. So many people that do not have jobs, so many people who have lost their homes, and now, if you ask any Gazan, any young Gazan, they would tell you that they just want to leave this place. They had given up on the idea of rebuilding it, so now they are seeking a future outside of Gaza, thinking that where safety and better opportunities are given are not in Gaza but outside of Gaza. That's what people usually say here, is that, no, we don't want to stay in this place, but we would rather leave. For me, I think as long as there is hope, I think we can have, we can live. As long as we hold dearly to what we actually love and want to protect, then we can live a better life. But then I look around me and I just think, oh, maybe we need 100 years to restore that Gaza, because it's all ruined. There are no homes, no places, there's nothing.
Before October 2023, people referred to Gaza as an open-air prison or a concentration camp. Friends of Palestine did, Palestinians did, but looking back, of course, before October 2023 and the months that followed, Gaza was a wonderful place to live in retrospect.
Yeah, I had